Yep.
But how was it just vibing in the mountains, like making art, you know? Because that was awesome when we had our little art nights. I love that shit.
Me too. Yeah. I was thinking about doing another one before I have to head out, but it was pretty nice. I don't know, something about being away from the city and being in nature is like good for the soul. I know that's kind of like stereotypical to say,
But it's
but
fucking true.
it's
It's
so true. Yeah. I'm gonna miss it. I'm gonna go camping for a bit, but yeah, I don't know if I can live in like, city after being out here, seeing bears eat my trash and, hanging out with the bees.
Hanging out with bees.
Yeah. As far as art, yeah, it's like I think it's really good for creativity to just have silence. Like I've noticed silence is kind of a weird thing that we don't often have. There's always some weird kind of ambient noise, whether it's cars or other people talking. But out here it's pretty quiet, so helps me think creatively.
Do you usually like just create in silence? Because I know like I'm always having something. Sometimes I'll get going and I'll just like forget to put something on. Do you just vibe in the silence?
I would say I like brainstorm in the silence. Like if I make myself be bored, then ideas come better. But when I'm actually like working on something, I'll probably put on some music just to get in the feel of it.
Yeah, get grooving.
Yeah. What kind of art have you been doing these days?
Oh, Jadrian, I've been painting dragons.
I figured.
Back at it.
Did you get
I
into
mean,
that hentai game yet?
not these days,
Yeah.
but I just
Someday.
don't have the energy for that anymore. I just want to paint just toothy dragons now. But what have you been up to? Because it's like, because when we are you still doing the same stuff? That was my phone. You were doing like when we were hanging out in the thing,
The BFA.
our little squad.
Yeah, so I have done like big black paintings with graphite recently. Like I went to a residency in Washington a couple months ago,
Nice.
and yeah, it was really cool. I did one of those paintings again. I haven't photographed it. It's just sitting in my closet wrapped up right now, but I will photograph it and get it on my portfolio and stuff. But recently I've been doing a lot of digital art because I want to move towards making a graphic novel. I have like a collaborative thing going with my friend. And yeah, I love storytelling. So I think graphic novels are an awesome way to like low budget, and like small crew make stories. You don't need a whole team, just two people, So yeah, I've been actually messing around with Procreate a lot on the iPad.
It's a
I just
good
like,
fucking thing.
yeah, it's awesome. And also fuck Photoshop because it's like so expensive and you can't just buy the software. And Procreate's only like 10 bucks. But yeah, character design, just learning how to digitally paint, learning anatomy, also considering like I've been watching movies to like get a feel for framing, because graphic novels are similar in that way where you're thinking about the shot. So yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Nice. Can you dish any details about your graphic novel, or you want to keep that under
Yeah,
wraps?
well, it's still kind of in early stages, but it's like sci-fi dystopian. Me and my friend Nick are both really into like things like Blade Runner. Yeah, freaking awesome. Especially the new movie was just so good.
It's the
And of
mix,
course,
man.
yeah. I mean, I love like Dune. I mean, I could list everything off, but it's like yeah, kind of superhero, sci-fi, gritty, dark, has kind of like warrior values, put into it, because we're both into that. I do kung fu and martial arts, so I love to bring that in, not only in like the philosophy, but also like the fighting, the combat in the graphic novel is hopefully going to be kind of dynamic, because I'm thinking about my martial arts training and putting that in there. But as far as story, it's kind of hard to explain. It's, you know, if you get down to like trying to explain the whole story of something like Game of Thrones, it's like it's like all over the place and like so expansive. So this is kind of similar, and we're still figuring it out. But you know, there's this character that lives underground. He's trying to work his way up. There's, you know, it's very impoverished, very oppressive, dystopian. There's like wars between planets. Ooh. So that kind of thing. Yeah, crazy stuff going on.
That's fucking exciting, though. I'm excited to see you guys move forward with it, see it reveal on the
I didn't realize how much work it was to create a graphic novel, but yeah, it's a lot of work.
Because you think like, oh, I just write the story and then I draw it, like
exactly. It's
like the angles and all the things, and then you like regularly drawing backgrounds, sometimes it's like
or even just trying to draw the same character over and over, oh my god.
They just change a little from panel to panel, it's okay.
I mean, you know, imperfection is part of art too. That's kind of, you know, the draw of it. If it were perfect, it wouldn't be fun.
How do you get away from that? Because I definitely suffer from that sort of like, has to be, just like that line has to be perfectly curved. Otherwise there's no point. Like,
I don't know. I think, you know, we both were in the BFA program. So I think you can probably relate to the idea of competition as like something that is rewarding, but also kind of a curse as you're in school, like competing with your fellow students. It's like, there's a level of respect and there's also, you know, you want to be good. You want to, you know, stand on your own against all these other people that are doing art. At least this is how I felt about it in the BFA program.
That's interesting that you saw it competitive, because I was like, squad, you know, like we're I imagine just all suffering together, you know.
I definitely felt that too. Like I felt more of like a companionship, but I guess also like in critiques, it's like if you bring something that is like the worst painting in the whole class, there's like that feeling of like, oh fuck. I gotta step up my game. I gotta like, you know, I gotta
That's sort of healthy competitiveness.
Yeah, for sure. Healthy competitiveness. But as far as like doing things perfectly, I think art has switched for me and you know, like more about, am I enjoying this in the moment rather than if it's perfect. Because I was just getting too stressed out trying to like do things perfectly. It was kind of like holding me back a little bit. I feel like a kind of blocking art, and not to get like too deep into, you know, my philosophy around art or whatever, but like, I mean, I guess this is the place. The platform to do that.
If you want to dish, like this is it.
Right. I mean, I think I feel like I started off doing art thinking that I should be making something big for the world. And I still have that desire. Like I want to, you know, I think all artists want to make something that people interact with, or that people care about, that the world cares about. And I think I'm finding for myself that people actually only care about something if you really care about it. You can't like want people to care about it and then they care about it. Like you have to just step back. I have to just step back and find what I care about, do it, not worry about drawing the circle perfectly, you know, and just create. But with that being said, I do also focus on the discipline aspect of sitting down and drawing every day and trying to get better and trying to learn anatomy and trying to draw that circle perfectly. But I never want drawing the circle perfectly to be the thing that that holds me back from creating, I guess. That makes sense.
Oh no, I was just gonna go on a thing of like, you know, life goes on even if you can't draw perfectly.
It does, how about you? Like, how do you deal with not being perfect as an artist and as a person, probably?
I just I cry about it and then I move on. you know, because like you, like obviously like when you fail at something, it sucks. You know, like even something that you've been sort of crafting towards, you like have it in your brain. You're like, this is going to be it. Like, I know exactly what I'm doing. It's going to like, I've done this a million times or whatever, or I like, or I just know I'm going to nail it this first time. And then it doesn't work. And you're like, okay, like, am I a failure? Like, am I worth like continuing this thing? And then you just got to go to bed and wake up the next day and try something else. You know, like go and go into your little recovery mode and then just try again later.
Yeah, that seems like a good process. Just, you know, not being too hard on yourself, taking a break.
Because it's like, I've made so much shitty art that I can't like let that stop me from pursuing sometimes doing some better things, you know? And I kind of give myself the opportunity to make like just sort of shitty little paintings that are still like, you know, they're satisfying to make. They're not like, oh my gosh, this person has like worked over this stovetop for 10,000 hours rendering every little detail. It's like, I used to do that sort of stuff, but now I'm just kind of like, bink.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like, I don't know, that makes me think of not, you know, another thing that helps create art is not taking it too seriously. It's like, you know, wanting to be the best painter or the best at anything is like taking it too seriously, but, you know, doing things, little things that maybe aren't that good, but enjoyable. It's like, there's kind of like a quaintness or something, kind of a nice feeling about that, you know, when it comes to art. Yeah.
I feel like it's like almost like stepping back, because you kind of get really into this thing. And it sounds like as you guys went through like the BFA, it was kind of like, you know, critiques and that kind of competitiveness. And then just of trying to avoid the feeling of being, like you said, like the worst art piece in the critique or something. But then after you get out of like that kind of, I guess, atmosphere, just kind of realizing like, oh, I don't need to like obsess over this rendering. Or like for me, it'd be like, I don't need to obsess this big over like that take or that like EQ or something. And it's just like, it just let it breathe. And sometimes, like Beth was saying, this is something that I do too, is just kind of, if I'm like obsessing over something too much, like it takes a lot to step away from that, but like just taking a step back and like going and having dinner or going for a walk or something, and then just revisiting it later. Like, I think one thing that was like super, super helpful for me early on when I was starting to do some like recording was my guitar teacher used to record me. And I remember there was one song that I just was not getting like this one guitar part down, like at all. Like I tried it like a whole bunch of times. And one of the things he said was like, you know, if you can't get the take within like the first five or so tries, like maybe it's just not the day for it, and just come back another day and try it again. And that was huge, because I feel like that's an easy way to, you know, dive into frustration with something. And then kind of almost get to a point where you stop enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, that made me think of this funny quote from Mad Men. Have you guys seen that show?
I actually haven't.
I've seen episodes here and there, but not like all the way through.
I don't think I'll phrase it exactly how he said it, but Don Draper, the main guy, says something along the lines of like, and he's in advertising and trying, you know, he's like this creative genius as far as advertising goes. And he's like, think about something a whole bunch, like think about it till you can't think about it at all. Then stop thinking completely and the idea will come. And I feel like that's happened a lot. Like, you know, you work at something, like you're saying, you know, you're trying to get this song, you keep working at it, keep working at it. It's not happening. You take a break, you let like some breath come in, and then bam, like something happens. I feel like, you know, in that pause or in that, you know, working hard and then letting it rest.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like, it's kind of similar to what you were saying earlier about how you kind of feel like silence or like almost getting yourself like bored is kind of where your inspiration and ideas kind of start coming from. And I think that that's an interesting thing, because I think I do that to an extent too. Like sometimes I, you know, I'm just in like that right mindset, but this is like super rare where it's just like, I like my emotions are in like this one spot, or like I hear like this one song and I was like, this made me feel this way. And I want to, you know, kind of create an experience similar to that. And I'm just like moved to like, I need to like drop whatever I'm doing and go start, you know, pick up a guitar and do something with it. But then I also feel like a lot of times just, you know, sitting in my room with nothing else going on and just kind of all of a sudden ideas just kind of start pouring out sometimes, and it's like, but I think that one thing that's tough, especially in like this world, like you said, there's like always some kind of ambiance, you know, whether it's cars or trains or something in the background. But I feel like a lot of people in this day and age are super uncomfortable with silence.
Yeah.
And I think that, at least for me personally, like getting to a point where becoming comfortable with silence and just not doing something for a period of time was huge in like for so many aspects of my life that I think it's, especially in like from a creative perspective, I think it's really worth, you know, picking up, trying to get into meditation or something and just kind of
definitely
being alone with yourself, because then you can maybe get to know those ideas and get better at kind of pulling them out of your brain.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, I feel like I feel like road trips and looking out a window for 5 hours, 6 hours, it's like being forced to just sit and look out the window brings that kind of like emptiness, and also those ideas start to come to me, at least in those moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to give yourself the space to let your brain just sort of do its own thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can sit there and force yourself to contemplate something for a long time, and then if you just let it sit, it'll come back to you in new ways, which is really nice sometimes when you're like thinking of this composition, like I want to do this painting with these things. Mm-hmm. And it'll come around sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I also think of like dreams in that way. Like a lot of my art has come from weird dreams where like the painting shows up in the dream, and those always feel like the most potent like emotions or like ideas for art, because like I don't just sit and contemplate it. Like it arrives naturally or from some other space or something, just arrives in my head. I've always really valued dreams.
I like that, because I think I haven't had this in a while, but like when I was like in high school and like early college and stuff, it was almost like whenever I had lyrical ideas or like lyrics, the ones that I think felt were like the best that I'd ever make were the ones where I was having like this wild dream and I just jolt up at like 2 a.m. and it's like, well, I need to write this down. And it just turns into like, basically like write the huge meaty part of a song in like 5 minutes in the middle of the night. And then like almost immediately like pass out again or something. And I like that idea of like the potency of dreams. And I do.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just like subconscious kind of coming to life, and it's hard to capture that. So I think it's really something special when you are able to take, basically, I guess, extract your dream and make it reality.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And it's exciting too, because I think about sometimes like when you have cool things happen in dreams and you're like, I need to keep that for something else. And I forget all of it. You know, I'm like, I know something happened, but when you're able to catch that thing and like make it reality, I think that's really exciting that you've like latched onto something that's so fleeting. Cause I have like characters like that exist that I've like met in dreams, you know, it's like, I'm gonna keep you for later. And being able to, I don't know, harness that energy of your imagination is fucking awesome. Like,
yeah,
I think it's so cool that you can find paintings in your dreams, cause that doesn't happen to me too often.
Yeah, well, it honestly hasn't happened in a while. I think it was happening more when I was doing the graphite paintings, because those are such kind of ambiguous forms. They're not like characters or like specific ideas. They're more like moving textures. And so the composition came to me rather than like a story for a graphic novel. But yeah, I think that's one of the coolest parts about being an artist too, is like exploring this relationship of, you know, feeling something and then trying to get others to feel something too, you know, and maybe they don't feel the same thing, but, or trying to convey what you feel in a physical form. And then getting better and better at doing that is, I don't know, it's such a cool opportunity, I feel like, to be able to explore that, you know, to have a dream and then to draw it or to play it in a song or something. It's awesome.
It's like, it's taking you and whoever's, you know, willing to listen or watch or see or look along on like this journey, that there's really no like set destination. It's just kind of you know, the journey for the journey.
I think thinking about art in that way is not a destination is kind of beautiful too, because it is just this process. Like, even if you make like a bestseller novel or something, or like you know you did it, you made it, it's like, well, art's with you for life. It's like a process of living, or a process of reflection and sharing. And I don't know, I've also recently been thinking about art. What does art have to do with community? Because I think, at least I started doing art just because I wanted to do it. But, you know, as I share my work and as I look at other people's work and, you know, went to school for art, like, art is something that not only can connect us through whatever the message is coming through the art, but also just the process of creating art, like art night, or, you know, listening to a song you create, or a painting, you know, you make, Beth, or, you know, I think that's something I'm thinking about more and more of as an artist.
Yeah. That's definitely something we've talked about a lot, is just that, you know, like, sense of community that you get from like going to school for art, or, you know, being able to collaborate or like be a part of some kind of DIY scene in any kind of sense, whether it's like your small little like acting guild in LA, or if we have like the, like for me, like the DIY music scene in Denver, or anything. And we all, and like for me, like same thing, I, you know, started making music, creating art for, because I wanted to, and I was just interested in, it was kind of a good, it felt almost like natural to express myself that way. But then, like, just being able to share it with the community just enhanced that experience. Yeah. And I think, honestly, maybe even like turned me into a more emotionally mature and aware and just more creative person. And I guess more fulfilled person too, because you got to do it with people that you care about, or people that you share something with, whether it's just the art, or like you guys decided to go into an art project together, you know, because of something that brought you together outside of that. And so it's just, you know, it's a way to become closer with someone, and it doesn't matter anything else. Like, that art itself can bring you together, or there's other aspects, and it's just kind of, I don't know, it's a connective medium.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Definitely.
Yeah. Cause there's like, I don't know, it makes it feel more real, I think, when you're like sort of in a community making art. Like, obviously in collaborative efforts, there's that, but even just like sitting around and like each working on your own individual thing, whether like whatever it is, like, and it's like, I mean, yeah, me too. I started doing art like because I fucking like doing it, you know? And, but like sitting around and like doing my own thing, sure, but like, and having other people do their own thing, it's just like, hey, we're all existing, doing this together, which just, I don't know, I fucking love that shit.
Yeah, I agree. It's super cool. Like, I felt like in school when we were all sitting around drawing in like classes of 20, I would think that it was kind of like we were collectively dreaming together, you know? Yeah, it is kind of an interesting practice. It's like, it's so individual to create something from you and bring it onto the paper, but, you know, at the same time, we're like looking at each other's work and like getting inspired by it or talking about it. And yeah, I wish everyone could have that experience. I miss that a lot about school. And, you know, because of COVID, I haven't been able to do art nights and stuff, but
yeah,
it'd be nice to bring that back. And I imagine like playing music is even more so that way. You know, I'm, you know, Patrick, I'm sure you can tell me more about this, but like, you're being in harmony with other members, but also just playing the same song. Like, I imagine that to be kind of euphoric.
Yeah. Like, honestly, it's just, there's nothing really like it. And I think it's, you know, for like performing like a concert, like, I feel like that's just a very, that's one of my like most favorite experiences in the world, whether I'm playing it or going, because I think that, I guess, also like just kind of ultimately thinking on this conversation that we're having now, like, just being a part of art and experiencing it, whether you are just kind of like consuming it or creating it, it's, that's, you know, further connecting people. And so like, for instance, like at a concert, now that we've talked about this, I think that, you know, I love going to concerts. I love playing concerts, but I think that the experience between the concert goer and also the person performing is actually a lot more similar than we maybe give it credit. Because I think, you know, you're both kind of joining together in this similar experience over this one medium for like a period of time. And, you know, it's just kind of, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but, you know, I'm just as happy going to see a concert as I am going to play one, because ultimately, like, I get to experience, you know, this art that I love and just kind of helps me express myself on either side. And I get to experience it with however many people show up.
Yeah.
You know, artists included, my friends included, whoever's, you know, you end up running into at the show. And it's just this collective experience of just, I guess, kind of raw emotions.
Yeah. You know, I think it's kind of interesting. Like, I, you know, going to a theater and seeing a movie is like, you watch the same art and you like experience this with other people, with an audience, but you don't really, you know, unless you're friends with them, you don't really interact with them. But there's something about being in the same dark room with a bunch of people that are also there to just experience this. Maybe this is too out there, but it's almost feels like kind of like a religious experience. Like you're going to like an altar or like prayer or something. And yeah, just something about the act of sharing in an experience that everyone wants to like share in or be there for is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like concerts are definitely religious like experiences. Mm. And I think that that's definitely just like hitting the nail on the head, because I mean, you also see artists themselves trying to reflect that in a very, very non-transparent way. Just kind of like, hey, like I want this to be kind of set like a religious kind of experience. And they like put on the visuals. It's almost like a church appearance kind of thing. And yeah, ultimately to an extent, like it is like a concert's a spiritual and like kind of religious in a sense experience, because you're all, you know, you're all there for the same reason. And ultimately it's kind of like a release or an expression.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think ultimately we kind of like create art and experience art and consume it to appreciate and cope with life in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that's one thing that's been super handy for me. That's kind of brought me a lot of peace. And I think even like further drive to be more and more creative is, thanks to COVID, I went on this whole like climb every 14er, what's it called? Run, but and my favorite thing is to go when there's as few people on the mountain as possible, because when you get to the top, it's just like, there's nothing like basically being on top of the world and like appreciating like this world is like a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And just having like 30 minutes of silence, just kind of taking it in, because I think that, I mean, I'm definitely speculating, but like, I feel like the, you know, art ultimately like exists because way back when someone was inspired by just how incredible the world was in one way or another, whether that like be incredible in like a beautiful way or incredible in like a terrifying way, that they just expressed it in some way. And it ultimately like became art. So kind of, I feel like it's like reconnecting with like almost like the birth of art, kind of being, like you said, like being out in nature, just kind of appreciating the world.
Yeah. That makes me think of like, I don't know, I feel like art makes us feel things, simply put. And that is amazing. Like, even if that, you know, like you said, is terror or awe. Yeah. I watched this movie the other day, The House that Jack Built. Have you guys seen that?
I've heard of that.
It's by Lars von Trier. It's like this really fucked up movie about a serial killer. It's amazing. But I liked it so much, but it didn't make me feel happy. It's so gruesome and dark. And I was like, why? What is the value? What is the artistic value of this for me? Like, if this isn't something that makes me feel a positive emotion. And I think it was just that it made me feel something. Made me feel something really strongly. And maybe that's not the emotion I want to feel all the time, but yeah, to be able to make people feel things, or, you know, give something that can make people feel things, is great. Cause like, I feel like it kind of can wake someone up, or like, you know, when I watch that movie, I was like present or something. I like stopped thinking about every other thing that I thought I should be thinking about, you know, whatever chores or things I had on my schedule. And I was just feeling something there with this piece of art. And for me, when I can be captivated by something like that and feel something, I love it.
I like that. Cause I think also in like today's world, you know, sitting down and binge watching something to an extent can be kind of viewed as almost like gross and unproductive, but ultimately, like, I think it's like, it's just a testament to your connectiveness to that piece of art, to that like show, to that story. And like you said, it's just, it's making you feel something. And, you know, that's where personal preference kind of comes in. And like, I think that's one thing that's super incredible about art is you have this huge spectrum, and you have, like, we've kind of talked about this a little bit before. You have like high art that's like, oh, this is high society, is like, this is what good art is. And then you have, you know, on the other spectrum of stuff that's kind of, I guess, viewed as like lowbrow. But either way, if it's, you know, making, like you said, making someone feel something, then it's doing what it was created to do. And
yeah, so that's just a great point. And coming back to what we were saying about like drawing a perfect circle, like it doesn't matter if you can draw a perfect circle, so long as whatever you make makes someone happy, or, you know, gives someone some kind of value, or, you know, like I think in school too, you are taught to like, there's like a hierarchy of art in a way. Mm-hmm. But getting out of school, I think, yeah, it's more about like, if you create a shitty drawing that's like a scribble and it makes someone like giddy and happy, like, fuck yeah. Like, who's to say that that's better or worse than any, you know, than like a Picasso painting or something. Yeah. Like taking the hierarchy out of what, you know, what is good art or what is bad art. And that helps me as an artist, because there's always going to be better artists. You know, you go on Instagram and you see 1,000 people doing something that you're trying to do better. You know, and so it's like, I have to take out the hierarchy and just do it because I love to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, good art is like such a subjective term, mm-hmm. because like, there's certain things, like, what was it? There's this TV show that I love, and I'm pretty sure you can just watch it on YouTube now, but it's called Danger 5. And it's just this really goofy, like low budget Australian TV show that's like historical fiction during World War II. And whenever I show it to people, like, I'll get like, you know, people are like, you like this, or, you know, this kind of thing. And for some reason, for me, it just strikes such a chord as like golden television. Like, that's something, I just love that show, but it's definitely not for everybody. And so that's the thing, is like, with any kind of art that you create, like, where, no matter where it ranks on like that hierarchy, it has the potential to connect with someone, and that's what makes it good art.
Yeah. And,
yeah. So it's just, I think it's so easy to like compare yourself to other artists and like just other people in general. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, the double-edged sword of social media, where you can share a piece of art and it can like really deeply connect with someone, and that can like change the course of, you know, a day, an hour, to shit, be it a life or something. But then also with access to social media, you can see so much, and like, I'm not that good, I should just quit. So it's just, it's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. I don't know. I like what you're saying. I feel like, yeah, social media is such an interesting thing to think about as far as art. I mean, in general, the internet is obviously insane, and nothing is sacred anymore, because the internet has it all. But I don't know, like, I've been questioning my relationship with Instagram as well, and like, you know, all the things we're talking about, and I almost want to just like make the art, post it on Instagram, but not even use the platform, because I want to like put art out there, but I don't want to like get sucked into the negative parts of social media.
Yeah, you know, I hop back on there after whatever, and it is so interesting, like, just to exist on there. Like, I try to just like roll in, like post my thing, and not check it too often. Because that's when it just starts getting crazy. Because it's like, it should not be a numbers game. Like, it should literally just exist for, as you're saying, Jake, just to like, here it is. Anyway, I'm going to go do my thing now. Like, there's no reason for like, you, like, I mean, I'll do it too. I'll sit there and I'll just scroll for hours. Like, there's no reason to do it. Like, and I think people should be okay with understanding that you can go in there and like post your things and maybe hunt for a little inspiration, but you don't have to like be a pawn in the algorithm. You can, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's hard too, because, you know, like you said, it's a numbers game. And so if, you know, we spend 50 hours on a painting and then we post it and we get 50 likes or something, it's like, oh God, what was the point? This is like, the value of this is not worth like how much time I spent, you know? I think that's an illusion. I think that's the illusion of social media and, you know, the numbers game you were mentioning. Yeah, I wish there's gotta be a better platform for artists. I don't know what it is. Maybe there is something out there, but.
I mean, there's like a million of them out there, right? And it's like, I don't know. They're always like, this one's going to be the new one. Like, everyone on Twitter is always like, oh, I'm moving over to this like platform now. Like, see me there.
Yeah.
It's just like, they're all the fucking same, you know, they really are. I don't know.
I'm interested in this. So for like, as like a platform, are you guys talking like social media platform that's like similar to Instagram, where it's kind of like you can post your art and see other people's art, but then kind of try and detach from like the numbers game? Because like, that's an interesting one, because for me with like music is like, the options are go via video on like YouTube and stuff, or like, you know, I've used Bandcamp for as long as I've been recording stuff, which is a decent platform, and then I learned how to get onto like iTunes and Spotify and everything. And unfortunately with those, like, at least from like the music side, is I don't see a way to escape the numbers game. Because especially with that, like, if it's, you know, people are paying for Spotify, people are paying for your album or something, you're always going to have a number attached to it. And also on top of that, like a monetary value, which is, you know, I guess to an extent problematic and tough to sit with at times. So like, I would love to detach from like the numbers game, but I'm not sure exactly how to do it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, yeah, I don't really know how we could detach from that. I mean, you know, even in real life, if you make something, maybe more people like it and some people don't or something, there still is kind of like a numbers game. I think the thing, I guess, more than the numbers game that bothers me is like, you know, I just said that, you know, on the internet, nothing is sacred. And so if you, you know, in the BFA program or in real life, if you, you know, showing at a gallery, it doesn't matter to me as much of how many people like it, but that whoever views it spends the time to engage with it. And the same as if I'm going to go see a movie or if I'm going to go see someone's art or something, like being on Instagram, you know, I notice myself scrolling through hundreds and hundreds of pictures that people did without giving it the time of day to really look at, you know, to be present with the art. And so then I just imagine, oh, okay, so this is what everyone is doing on Instagram, where they're just like, I post something and they see it for like 2 seconds and then move on. It's like, there's something kind of sad and sick about that. And so if there were to be another platform, I wonder, you know, the numbers game can be in it, you know, likes or hearts or whatever, but why does everything have to be so disposable? And I think that's like a larger thing just with our climate, our culture too. Like, everything is disposable. You know, you want the new phone, you want the new whatever. We don't have to go there, but yeah, that's my main grief with like Instagram, is it just feels like it cheapens everything.
Well, it's real shit, you know, like, cause like, even that sort of like, oh, I want the new thing. I want this. Like, that happened. Like, I've noticed that too. It's like, okay, now everyone's using this new watercolor palette, like, or these things like that. And it's just so, I don't know, so interesting. And this sort of disposable, like, quick glance thing, this has been sort of on my brain, like, that you could like go to an artist's like Instagram page and like literally flick your thumb for like 2 inches and see their entire like fucking career in 2 seconds.
Yeah,
which, true. It's like, which is a little different. I was talking to Patrick about it, like, than experiencing music, because if I were to explore like an artist's like entire discography, I could do it in a day, but I would have to sit down and listen to everything. Mm. Like, you can literally just like blink at like yours or my Instagrams and see everything we've done, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd never thought about that before. Mm-hmm. Like, especially like the stark contrast there between like the audio medium and just like the visual one. And like, also with, you know, from music's perspective, we also have, you know, you can get the recording, you know, you can look at like the recorded, like the discography and like the recorded library, but then there's artists and stuff who are just like a completely different experience live, which is interesting. Like, there's some like experience that you don't get a second time, which is like one thing that I think that gives me hope about art moving forward is literally like learning more about the EDM scene, which is very similar to like the jam band scene, because the recordings are there. Yeah. But the new experience, like the art on the go, the improvisation in the jam band, like performance, the EDM performance, that new set that literally nobody except for the people who are there right now are going to experience. I think that's kind of, you know, it's just like a premium experience to an extent. And I think that's both exciting and, to an extent, I guess a little bit frustrating, because it shouldn't have to be like that exclusive for people to like really like appreciate art to that extent. I don't know if that made any sense, but
yeah, no, totally.
Cause then I'd imagine like on like the graphic side of things, that would be kind of like people would pay, you know, essentially the price of that concert ticket would be like paying you to draw something like exclusive for just that person to experience. So I don't know. It's just kind of, it draws different boundaries on art and how we value it and stuff.
Yeah,
there's always things that I think do have to be experienced in person sometimes, though. It's hard to like, it's like, what is like accessibility versus like, I can't think of the word, exclusivity. Yeah. Because it's like, okay, I can see the picture of this famous painting, and that's great, and I can see the super HD like museum quality picture of it, or like being able to go there and see the texture on the canvas is like just totally different. And like going to the concert and hearing like those chords live instead of like, I don't know, I think, I don't know what my point was. I just think it's like interesting to see things in the flesh versus the sort of digital access medium.
Well, I have a perfect solution and the perfect middle ground. We just got to get VR going so that we can experience art in a virtual world,
and then it can actually just like touch the paintings.
Yeah,
that'd be sick. Dude, it's so interesting how technology can create such an like even conceptually immersive experience. Cause now like you literally just said that, now my brain is going crazy thinking about like VR gallery stuff. Cause there's like so many immersive, like, I mean, they have those things where they like project the image onto the, like, I don't know. We saw that sort of conceptual stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
But, yeah.
Like, you can have some crazy experiences in a gallery.
When I like a couple years ago, I went to visit Japan, and there was like this gallery in Kanazawa, this like art gallery, and one of the exhibits was like a VR thing, and so they had this like section of the room blocked off where you could walk around and experience this VR exhibit. And I had never done VR before. I was kind of skeptical, but it was one of the coolest things I had ever experienced. It was so weird. It was like actually putting on a headset into a dream, because it wasn't like a video game. It was like an artist created this weird experience where you're like walking up these wooden steps of this old temple, but then maybe it shifts and you're like flying up and then landing on the top of a Buddha's head and looking down, and like then it like shifts into this water area where you're like floating on clouds, like all this stuff. It was insane. And it just made me think of like the possibilities of VR, there was no objective in that. It wasn't like a video game. It was just an experience, like you would experience a painting or any mm-hmm. form of art or a song. So yeah, it'd be cool to learn how to like program and, you know, make VR art, but I imagine that's pretty hard.
Oh yeah, super technical, but the idea is endless.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
I think that's, and also I think that's a good thing, like focusing on that experience too, as opposed to, I guess, any kind of value, is just that that's something that's becoming more and more, I think, prevalent and important in this world of like today's world, where I almost feel like we get a lot of like almost like a such a level of like numbness and desensitization mm-hmm. to a lot of things in life, that we really do have to lean on art, and we rely on it a lot more than we ever give ourselves credit, because in some cases it takes so much more for someone to feel something and just like kind of connect with an emotion. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, a lot of times, art, I think, is just like the perfect way to help bring those emotions forward.
Yeah.
And so just kind of like that experience, kind of focusing on just an experience, like it doesn't have to be anything specific, just kind of something new and, you know, maybe wild or dreamlike or scary.
Yeah.
Because, and like, I also kind of wanted to circle back to this, is just like, it doesn't, like the emotions that are kind of extracted or experienced from art, it doesn't have to be happy and positive. And like, mm-hmm. just like you were saying, when you were engrossed in that movie, is just sometimes feeling like an intense emotion is just, it's almost like freeing, and it's like lifting a weight mm-hmm. off of you.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I feel like those kind of things can get like tied up within someone.
Yeah.
And like the fun example I have is my old roommate. We'd always do kind of prank each other and, you know, scare the shit out of each other with some like this little thing. And every time I got him like really good, he would like come and hug me afterwards, whether it was like I'd set it up sometimes and he'd like got scared shitless, like just going to the bathroom in the middle of the night once. And just, you know, for him, that was the first time that I really like realized like, oh, horror is an incredible genre, because that heightened, like, you know, your heart rate gets going, it's exciting. Yeah. And it's kind of like a release of, you know, some kind of emotion and stuff. And so he just like was like, oh, thank you, I just love getting scared like that. And it's like, I'd never That's really thought about awesome. That before.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That totally makes sense. Like, is it catharsis? Is that the word? I actually don't fully know what that word means, but I think it's something like relating to release through feeling, mm-hmm. through like feeling something intensely. Yeah. But I think that the part about horror movies is a great point, because yeah, I've always wondered why, what is the appeal of, you know, shitting your pants from fear by watching a movie? But there is value.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I think also the same can be said, like we talked to Sophie about it. She mentioned like her friends ask her like, oh, why do you always write like sad songs or like about sad things? And it's like, sometimes that's just kind of the emotion that's easiest to express. And I feel like there's a lot of sad music out there, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong mm-hmm. with that. Like, we all love sad music.
Like, yeah.
Let's
yeah.
be real.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, sad music is a good way, or like sad art to an extent is a good way to kind of be alone with yourself and express that, and feel that and experience it and like consume it, so that you can feel it and also feel safe. Because I feel like mm-hmm. in the social media world and just the very toxically masculine world that we live in, mm-hmm. like sadness is something that's, we're getting a lot better at it, but it's still just something that's viewed as kind of like a weakness, but it's something that is very natural to experience. So being able to express that in some way is very healthy. So I think that's why we have a lot of sad artists who get to express it in some way. We get sad art and we all love it.
Yeah. Getting in touch with your emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's like a realness to sadness too. You know, when you watch the Teletubbies, you're like, this is not real life. No one's, there is no happiness like this. Like, this is not real. But yeah, you listen to, I don't know, whatever sad band you, comes to your head, and it's relatable. It's like, yeah, we all feel sad for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's that, but then there's also like, I feel like with that, it can almost become just part of a formula, like a mindless formula. Like, what was it? I think like pretty shortly after my last breakup, I had someone say like, oh, just go listen to Post Malone for a couple hours and cry it out and you'll be good. And I was like, well, that might be like kind of true. I, you know, I don't want life to just be like this formula kind of thing where it's just like, this happened, apply this. Sad, apply Post Malone.
I love that he chose Post Malone as your cure. Like, what the yes. fuck?
What? Is he a Post Malone band-aid? Yeah.
That's oh, so shit. Funny. There's a merch idea. He just sells band-aids with his like face on it.
Do you guys ever do that though? Do you ever like go through something and you're like, yep, time to dive into the sad music?
Yep.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
I think for me, the thing that's that I enjoy, and like this is one thing that's nice about Spotify, and I'm actually like really starting to lean into it, is like their Discover Weekly. Is like oh, really start, if you start using it like regularly, it really does start like giving you like some really good stuff yeah. that you do like. And I'm really about that because I love finding new music, because it's like I love the songs and artists that I love, but mm-hmm. I feel like it's so easy to just get stuck in like, I'm gonna listen to these three artists for 7 years. Yeah. And so it's just yeah, like yeah. you know, I'm an artist and I want to get, it'd be nice to, you know, there's something nice about finding a new artist that nobody's really heard of before, like within your circle, and just kind of being like, with like, I guess kind of like for me, the artist, like, I got you, like, I really appreciate this.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah, I agree. I had this weird idea about Spotify the other day. I was like, you know what? I bet in the future, so Spotify curates playlists for you, like you're talking about, like Discover Weekly. And I'm like, in the future, Spotify is just going to instantaneously, based off your algorithm, create a song that will 100% be what you enjoy. Oh my God. So everyone, no one else will even hear that song. They'll just like be playing music in a stream that's like curated for your personal taste.
Mm-hmm. They'll get like your, it'll sync up with like your Fitbit or whatever kind of oh health yeah. watch you have, and just yeah. be like, we noticed your heart rate is increasing, here's some calming music.
We noticed you're eating Cheetos and ice cream, you must have gone through a breakup. Here's yeah, a song. So,
what was it? I think there's this joke I made, like every week, every year you get like the Spotify Wrapped, and like eventually they're just gonna start sending it with like a package of like a month of free therapy sessions to everybody. Like did you guys go through, there was the judgmental AI that you just submit, like you log into like your Spotify on that website, and then it just like rips you your music taste apart. It's like, oh, you listen to this. Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
That's awesome. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it was like, what was it, one of them was like, the best thing I had was, it said, oh, I see you've been listening to Camp a lot, like a lot. Are you okay? And then you could answer like yes or no. And it's like, oh, well, I'm just an AI, so I can't do anything about it, but hope you're okay.
But I wish you the best, buddy.
That's funny.
So I keep hearing this like faucet go on ahead, and I don't know of any faucet that's above where I am. So I'm very confused. Anyway,
it's a ghost faucet.
Ghost faucet. Oh yeah. My God.
Welcome to your own horror movie.
Yeah. Oh no. No, seriously. Like, just to tie into the horror movie, just to admit that I do not like horror movies. I'm sorry. I do not like being scared or like grossed out or like, I know like people are like, oh, but you're experiencing emotions, but so, you know? Like, my not parents yet. Have been watching the fucking Purge series, and I hate oh, yeah. that shit. I don't like violence.
Yeah, I get that.
Makes me sad. I mean, yeah. I love gore, but I don't like violence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just not for everybody. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like for me, like, horror is not going to be the movie genre I go to, but yeah. I do still enjoy it. It's just not like my top one. I every now and then it's just like it hits the spot, but it's not like my, you know, oh, it's Tuesday night, it's movie night, let's watch, you know, this week's horror movie or something.
Yeah, I feel that too.
Like, I get it, but just leave me out of it. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll be waiting for you outside the haunted house.
Well, I feel like also that is kind of like a community kind of thing too, because, you know, like with me pranking my roommates and stuff with just like, you know, scaring them and stuff, and they scare me. I feel like that's different from maybe like sitting down and watching a horror movie by yourself, because you're, it's a shared experience.
Yeah. It's like, we did this together.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is that.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys seen Midsommar? I just watched that horror movie and it's freaking awesome.
I actually have not watched it, but.
Okay. Well, we can talk about it when you guys do. It's so good. Yeah.
No, that one does seem kind of interesting. Very, I know sort of it. The idea of the endless sun in a scary situation is really interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I do really like as far as horror movies go is like, jump scares are fine, but if it's like completely reliant on a jump scare, like that's when I kind of lose interest in it.
Yeah.
And like, I really appreciate like the kind of like, I guess like psychological horror kind of stuff, even though it like will literally like screw me up for a week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I feel like, I don't know, Black Mirror is like, makes me more afraid than most horror movies that have like that jump factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can't get enough of that show.
Yeah. It's too real. Yeah.
But I think that's also, it's like so enticing about it is that it's just, you know, it's so close to reality that it's, you know, almost exciting to entertain those ideas, but then not, you know, kind of draw the line and be like, no, it's not real. And I think that's one thing that's super interesting about like art in general too, is like you have that freedom to be like, no, this is like a story that's like super real. Like this, there's a chance that this is like especially like when you're talking about like stories and stuff, like this story that I'm writing in theory, like could have happened, you know, 10 years ago or something like that. And then you also have the opportunity to write something like super fantastical and be like, this is obviously not real. So I think it's interesting that you kind of see that where it's, you can go from escapism to just realism. And I think that is super exciting with art, because you can kind of pick and choose what you want to experience to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And like, I don't know. I feel like there's like this delivery system of stories that's really cool. Like, even if it's super fantastical, there's like, you know, stories that make it really big, even if their fantasy have some kind of like underlying truth or something. And I don't know if it's like a truth, but like maybe like an insight or something, or like something that, you know, like Game of Thrones is pretty out there as far as reality. There's no dragons, you know, sorry, Beth, as far as we know. But the way that it talks about power in human nature is like, I think everyone can be like, yeah.
Yeah. Even if there's not a human in the story, it's still human, like at its heart, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like every story that we experience and know of at the moment is human. And so we can connect to it on some level.
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder what will be the story of COVID? Because, you know, of course, a bunch of media is going to come out, you know, after this time. And, you know, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of World War II movies, you know. And so what will be the reflection of COVID, you know, 10 years from now or 20 years from now? How will that become a story, or, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just honestly, just like 2020 in general, like there's already been a movie about 2020 and other, you know, movies about the time periods like around here. So I'm interested to see, you know, how those evolve and how the telling is, you know, portrayed, because especially like, I guess just like the political landscape and stuff too, is there's so many different ways that 2020 can have been like interpreted and spun that it's, to an extent, it's fascinating and also terrifying to think about how the story of the past year and a half, 2 years is going to be told.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like the only movie I've seen, it was just like a Funny or Die production with like few people from like SNL and Samuel L. Jackson, and it was a comedy, but still, like, it was, you know, it captured everything that happened from in 2020, and it was Yeah, it's interesting to, you know, every moment that we live is going to be in a history book at some moment. So it's kind of weird to like realize and like kind of almost like accept that and kind of see like, how is this going to be reported to like the next generation?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I mean, isn't there some famous quote like history is written by the only by the victors or something like that? But like our history, you know, like you were saying, is like kind of ambiguous in a way. You know, some things aren't, like Trump was president, Biden became president, like things like that. But like, you know, how will, when there's so much disagreement about what the actual reality of the world is, how will history record it? It is a good question.
And I think it's also fascinating because like in the past, there's historical facts that, you know, we're basically going off of written accounts for the most part, like for most of history, which who knows if those are like super correct. Whereas now we have video evidence and now we're into this era of, like video and any kind of recording, which is arguably maybe a little more reliable than what some, you know, random Pope writ down in 930 AD.
Yeah. Like,
it's interesting to see kind of how that's going to be interpreted and recorded and reported essentially. And I thought, I'd imagine that, you know, we'd have more complete records and stuff, but seeing how the flow of information has been so basically like contended, especially in the past few years, it's just wild. And it's, you know, a little bit concerning.
Yeah. I wonder too, like, you know, we look back at Greek culture with kind of a respect or something, because so much of our, you know, so much of the world's culture has come, you know, for example, Greek culture, you know, they did all these amazing things, but then 200 years from now or 300 years from now, people look back and see fucking TikTok videos. They're going to be like, wow, that was a dark period for humans. Like, I don't know. Like, what do we have to show for, you know, I mean, and there's been plenty of innovations and crazy stuff, but
I mean, there's already been like people saying like, oh, Linkin Park is dad rock, and seeing little things where it's like what was it, I saw this picture from like Depop, it was like vintage concert tee and it was like Metro Station.
Oh my god. It's like
no
but not yet,
like especially like the 90s to early 2000s is like a very interesting point in like history, because you got to see the explosion of the internet and the world completely change, probably like it's never really been changed in since the Industrial Revolution. And like that affected everything. Like if it affected like business, it affected art and everything, like everything changed basically overnight.
Yeah, it's crazy that, you know, from our perspective, we got to go through that transition. Like, I remember the internet as a kid. It was the shitty flash videos and like games you play on like newgrounds.com or like, you know, weird. The internet was so like simple. And then we did experience the explosion of it, or like the explosion of Facebook. Like, do you guys remember the transition from MySpace to Facebook?
Yeah, that was
like, that's freaking weird that that's, because that's kind of monumental, you know, the dawn of Facebook, and we got to like experience it. Cause I remember being like, Facebook, what the fuck is that? Who's Tom? Guy looks like a dick, you know, like, and then everyone's using Facebook. It's, you know, it's huge, but
it's almost like unexplainable to watch it, like how it grew and like exploded the way that it did. Because it's just like, for some, like it just kind of became part of normal life, like everyday life too. Whereas I feel like with a lot of stuff, I don't remember there being like a lot of, you know, speculation and like concern. And like, so there's this podcast that I love listening to called Throughline. I'm going to recommend it fucking every episode here, but they basically like sit there and they look at, you know, something happened today or in like the recent time here. And then they say like, okay, so what kind of similar event has happened in the past that we can look at, or if there's something that's happening now, like what led up to it happening now. And it's like there's a bunch of episodes where they look at history in different perspectives, which is fascinating and I love it.
What's that podcast called?
Throughline from NPR.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll check that out.
And it's super cool. And they, like, I've mentioned this episode on this podcast before, but they talk about, like, there's one episode about new technologies where they were talking about the Sophie AI, which is basically just like the head that can express facial features and hold a conversation with a human, and how it's terrifying people. And just like, you know, there was a point in time when coffee was banned because coffee shops were, you know, where people would meet, drink coffee, get hyped up on caffeine, and talk about revolutionary ideas like democracy. And that scared people. So it's just kind of, I don't remember, you know, you see this fear about AI, you see this, you know, concern about the internet in general when it was coming around. But then I feel like certain aspects of the internet, there wasn't that kind of concern. And I feel like Facebook is one of those. I totally forgot what we were talking about. And so I'm glad I was able to like circle back there and remember what it was.
Oh yeah,
like, Facebook. I don't remember like a general concern about Facebook really. But also I was like, what, 12 when it like launched and everything and everyone started getting on it. So
yeah,
I don't remember like, you know, well, I think being like super scared about it or anything.
The concerns are so subtle too. You know, like the threat of nuclear war is a pretty obvious threat. Like you bomb someone, they're going to blow up. But like the threat of Facebook or the damage potential of Facebook kind of had to happen before we realized it, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because it was psychological, kind of like trauma or something. Like the damage comes later, you know, in your... Yeah. As you develop and you start to realize like all this shit happened to you and, you know, but you didn't necessarily realize it at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's an interesting thing to look at. Like, do you guys think that we would have this acceptance of therapy and kind of mental health awareness if we didn't have social media? Because I feel like from my perspective, like, I guess my theory to an extent is that social media helped highlight all of these issues that we were refusing to address and kind of see were there until social media brought out like all of these psychological issues and damage.
Oh, that's interesting. So you don't think it's necessarily causing it, but you just think it's illuminating them?
Well, it's definitely causing it to an extent, but it's something that's always been there. But now with like all of these, you know, mental health awareness and kind of a growing acceptance of therapy as a good thing. Because I feel like there used to always be this stigma, and there still is to an extent a stigma around going to therapy. And so I think that social media helped illuminate and also simultaneously cause a lot of mental health issues and psychological damage. And so I think that through that, it has also helped bud an acceptance and value in mental health awareness and, you know, a value in therapy.
No, it's definitely like the internet, the internet's like a huge resource, right? So it's like become a resource, I think, for people to be like, you know, like here's like an infographic, like if you have these and these things going on, like maybe you should get that checked out. And people are like, oh wait, I do have those things going on. And it's like sort of like allows people to be like, maybe I'm not as okay as I thought I was. And because everyone sort of experiences that together, I think. And then you have that sort of like boom of like the self-care era and everyone being like, make sure you're taking care of yourself. And then that being capitalized upon by like, you know, corporations and stuff, like buy our face masks, have a self-care day. And it's like, it's, I think the normalization of sort of like therapy and stuff, definitely. Like, I mean, without the internet, like that wouldn't have happened as intense over the course of just a couple years as I think, you know.
I think normalization is the best way to put it, because I feel like, you know, it used to be like, oh, did you hear so-and-so goes to therapy? And now it's just like, I'll bust into a room and be like, oh, my therapist told me this month or something like that. Like it's a very normal and, you know, positive thing now as opposed to like a negative thing. And like, yeah, like we said, like social media is such a like double-edged sword, because it brought about, I'd argue it helped bring about that normalization, and it brought about that normalization and just kind of, you know, allowing us to really look at and say like, maybe I'm not as okay as I thought kind of thing, and look at the psychological damage that social media brought. But it also let us connect with people and be vulnerable with new people and take care of our own mental health in a new way, and also just express ourselves in art in a way we were never able to before. And so it's just,
That's interesting. I also think of like, there's kind of a way of being anonymous. Oh, it's not quite anonymous, but like if you're talking about your therapist to someone in person, it's different than if you kind of post it. There's like a buffer or something through the internet that I think allows people to, in good and bad ways, say more of what they feel. Like, you know, people say a lot of shit on Twitter, but it's good that they're expressing themselves. I mean, they're also saying a lot of shit that probably shouldn't be said, but yeah, I think there's this like buffer that these platforms and that the internet provides for people to say something like about their therapist, you know, that maybe they wouldn't say to someone in person.
Yeah. The internet and social media is just like this gray blob that provides so much positive and so much negative at the same time. It's just kind of, you know, it's this toy that we've been provided, and it can really hurt us or it can really enrich our lives. And it's kind of up to us as a whole to kind of determine how that's going to go.
Yeah.
Well, which is kind of fortunate and very unfortunate.
I don't know. Are you guys thinking that it's going to go well, or it's going to keep going to shit?
Hard to say.
I think that unfortunately, I don't think we'll be able to form it into a purely positive experience, but I think it will forever stay this double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just think we all need to, as long as we can get our heads around this sort of like anti-numbers game that we were talking about earlier, and just be able to exist on social media for the thing that it's designed to do, which is to share what's going on in your life and see what's going on in some other people's lives, and then turn it off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, because that double-edged sword, it's literally like, if you just stay on there too long, you'll see something that'll just fuck you up. So you should just post your thing and go home.
Yeah. Also, I think Facebook should take a note from MySpace and let you customize your page and put My Chemical Romance as your, you know, your main song, and deck it out with stickers and blinking stuff, like,
and casually trick you into learning HTML.
Yeah. For a second, I thought you were going to say take a note from MySpace and shut down.
That too, yeah.
But definitely some nice casual HTML. Like,
yeah.
Could you imagine if instead of the grand move to Facebook, everyone just stayed on MySpace and just became like amazing coders? What a world.
You think the world would be a better place awesome. Without Facebook, and it was just always MySpace?
You know? Hard to say. I would be speaking to less ants and listening to more music. I don't know why I said that. I don't speak to anybody on Facebook, but I don't know.
I mean, yes, if MySpace stayed what it was and didn't evolve into something like Facebook, like Facebook is a shit show. Like, have you seen how many buttons and like just crap there is on there? Like, you could spend hours just like trying to navigate the site. I just hate it. Yeah. I think Facebook is hot garbage. Like, what the fuck? Like, simplify and like, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, yes.
I haven't logged onto it in like probably close to a year now, because I realized the only like good use I have for Facebook is organizing events. Like, its event planning like is pretty solid. And it's like, it was the middle of COVID, and I was like, I'm not going to be putting on a show anytime soon. Like, I don't need this. Like, it's just a drain. So
yeah, it's great for that. Yeah.
I think like social media, if you can recognize how it's useful to you, then that's when you can really get like a very net positive experience from it. But I feel like it's so easy to get, you know, dragged down into like the negative and just kind of comparative and everything, the numbers game. But if you can recognize, like, this is why I need this, and this is, or not necessarily need this, but like, this is why I want this, and this is what I'm going to use this for, and you can kind of keep it compartmentalized like that, you'll have a better time, I think. But it's also very difficult to just do that, because they, like you said, like Facebook, they're gonna throw 700 buttons at you. How about try this game? Or do you want to buy this from Jimmy down the street?
You want to play Farmville? Fuck off, Facebook. Like, God damn it, I don't want to play Farmville. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I could just keep shit on Facebook, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We should just make this podcast about how much Facebook sucks.
It honestly kind of is.
Yeah.
We'll call it Fuck Suck.
Fuck Suck.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think would be the ideal, like, way for art to be on the internet and interact with art?
It's so hard to say, because like everything sort of follows like what you would expect it to be. It's like, okay, upload image, post image, write caption, gain like follow person, make comment, and it's like everything has that. But it just like, it's just all up in our brains that gets it all fucked up. Like, old school DeviantArt was lit. Like, maybe it's just
because
the like culture that we had at that time, that we weren't so like obsessed with like being super popular or being super perfect. Like, we were all just literally uploading whatever, because it was fucking DeviantArt. You know, like, I don't know if we'll ever get back to something that, I'll call it chill, for sure.
Yeah.
I think there is, that's possible. I think it's very possible, but I think there's just like this really gigantic hurdle that we have to overcome. And it's just getting rid of capitalism. Because honestly, like here's my argument for that too, is like you're talking about, like, we can sit there and like, we're going to reminisce about like the old days of the internet, where everything wasn't attached to like your monetary or economic or even like personal, like egotistical value via likes or like how much money you're making off of your engagement with social media and stuff. And I feel like that's when it was at its best. Like you said, DeviantArt, it's like you just, you know, post something and, you know, you get to share your art with other people, and it's like a culture that's created. And I feel like you kind of see a little bit of that still with like Reddit and stuff. But still, it's all based on like transaction. It's like, how many upvotes can I get? How many likes can I get? How much money can I get off of, you know, advertisements for my YouTube video? And it's just like, it became exploited. Like the internet was absolutely exploited, and it was only a matter of time before it became exploited. And we lost all of, you know, that pure, ultimately, like the innocent years of the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. So I think that, like, as far as like an art platform, it would have to be completely detached from like you can sit there and like everything, and I think that that's has some kind of value. But I think as long as it has to be like, you as the person who posted your art, you get to see the likes, but nobody else gets to see it. And like, everyone gets like a very even like level of distribution to an extent, because you can literally just, on today's Instagram and Facebook, you can literally just pay to get more likes, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing as if you're like, you know, people complain about video games that are pay to win. Like, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, if you have money, you get more exposure, and that sucks. And I think that's takes away from so many artists. And so I think the platform would have to be, you know, if it's, you know, I think like, you know, and originally you could stumble upon, you know, a random artist from halfway across the world. And I think it should be like that, where these platforms will share that art with people. And I'm not sure what kind of algorithm you'd have to make. It just has to be whatever Instagram isn't. Like, whatever Instagram's doing, it's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And like, it's all based on like what's more popular. And living life in a popularity contest fucking sucks. So I think that like being able to share that art and it getting distributed evenly, no matter how many likes it's getting, is what matters most. Because you'll see something that you don't connect with, or like, you know, your shitty drawing. If you like, for me, like my shitty song will get, you know, distributed at some point and stuff kind of thing. It's like the art that you're not proud of in hindsight kind of thing is still going to get distributed and someone's going to see it, and it can still connect with someone because some something that you maybe discard can mean a lot to someone else. And I think that's one thing that makes, you know, kind of more of like a level playing field with art so like fascinating and so much more fulfilling is that, you know, sometimes I will find like a local artist that like they recorded the song like in their bedroom and it sounds like the recording quality is not there, but the song itself like really helped me experience something.
Yeah.
And so like for me, that's like, and I've literally had that happen, but half the time I have to like dig for that. And I feel like you shouldn't have to dig to find those, you know, little golden nuggets that will help you experience something and have an overall like positive experience and just like expressing an emotion. And I think that an art platform would have to have, you know, that level distribution, and how we achieve that, I'm not sure, but I know it has to do with detaching from the popularity contest and, you know, the capitalistic pursuit kind of thing of like, how can I get something from this? How can I exploit?
Yeah.
How can I exploit the social media? And like from the social media perspective, how can we exploit this artist essentially is the, you know, the never ending cycle that we're stuck in at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are hard problems to solve. I like what you're saying. I don't know. Did you guys ever play Gaia Online? Do you guys know what that is?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Gaia was the shit, but it was kind of cool because it was like it was social media, you know, you could have your little caricature and it was like kind of anime based, but it was like a very, there was like a lot of elements to the site that was kind of like DeviantArt combined with Facebook, combined with all these like little mini games and like, but it all connected into one community. And so you could meet your friends in different ways, or you could meet people in different ways, you know, through the forums or through, you know, playing the actual like adventure game of Gaia, and like, and it had its own economy and currency. And it was kind of cool because it felt like everything you were doing was just playing into this world or like being a part of this community of Gaia. And even though you didn't meet these people, you actually felt like you were kind of a part of something.
Yeah.
And even though none of the stuff in Gaia transferred to real life, I mean, except that people did sell like digital items for real money and shit like that. But like, for the most part, you know, you just play Gaia to play Gaia, not to get likes and stuff. Like, it was really fun. So something that is multifaceted like that, you know, where you could actually group together with other artists and have like a gallery showing online or something, or like, I don't know, like pretty much social platforms, they create rules that you have to abide by. Like, you know, there's a set amount of emojis or like different expressions you can do, or like they set the rules. They should just set better rules, or rules that actually create community rather than promote like a capitalist mindset, like you're saying, like, you know, this competitiveness or getting likes or getting more of the currency, whatever that currency is. I have no idea what that looks like exactly, but
yeah,
that would be the dream.
Return to forums.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, bring that back. MySpace, DeviantArt, Gaia.
Yeah, and even on like the coding side, like GitHub, open source projects. Some of those are super cool. You see these incredible like open source projects and stuff that are just incredible. And you see those like open source. Like honestly, open source is the way to go. I think because you get some really great things.
Yeah,
just that openness and collaborativeness.
Yeah, I feel like collaboration is like a great way to take the kind of ego out of anything, out of art making, or, you know, being a part of a group or being a part of a collaboration, you know, then it's not just about you. It's like working together.
Yeah.
And I love cool that shit.
Yeah. That's like what I miss about just being a part of a music scene. Like the live shows and everything, like there's nothing better than like getting put on a bill and like, you've never heard of this band before, but now you're playing a show with them and you get to meet them and talk to them and see their set and hang out with them. And then boom, you've got a new connection. You've got a new friend. You've got a new person that you can collaborate with moving forward. And it's just, it's so like, it's collaborative and you just support each other. And I love that because like within like a band, like you're collaborating with a few people and that in itself is just something incredible. But then on top of that, you get to collaborate with these other artists. So it's just like another level to that circle, which is just awesome. And then you can kind of like mix and match and you can create your own show lineups and stuff. And I love doing that. And then you get to like meet new people to go jam with or write a song with, or like, hey, can you like feature on this song? And it's, that's just my favorite thing and I miss it. And so like, yeah, I think collaboration over competitiveness is what it's all about.
Yeah.
We're a community, you guys. We're not enemies.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Fuck Zuck. Fuck Zuck.
Well, Jadrian, it's been so real. And maybe one day we'll see community back to its what it could be on the internet. But I think we've got just one more question for you before we wrap things up here.
Two more questions.
One is what a have request, you got, Patty?
Actually. Where can we find you? Like,
plug your shit, Jadrian.
Oh yeah, self-promotion. Yes. I'm on Instagram at j.uej, jade.uej. I also have a website, which is the same thing, jadeuej.com. Yeah, that's where you can find me. You can also find me in dreams. I wander around them often. Take a look for me. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right. Then to send us on our way, Jadrian, what feels like home to you?
Well, my actual home of Lyons, Colorado feels like home. Yeah, it's this cute little town. I used to walk around it all the time with my friends. It feels like home. It's just one of those small towns that you don't forget. That's my home.
Hey.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Hell yeah.
Going home to, yeah.
Lyons.
Yeah.
Lyons. Lyons, Colorado. In the mountains.
Spent the last tear trying to mend the way you left me lying wide-eyed in my bed.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk with you guys.
Yes, thank you for hanging out with us. This was awesome.
Yeah.
Got pretty real on the art stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime. Anytime.
I just love to talk about art and toppling capitalism and everything in between.
There's something precious in its design. The way the door shut, but I still can't see through fine.
There's a lot in between.
Slowly incorporating everything into this podcast. Let's talk about art.
Nice, nice. Next podcast, hentai, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, cool.
That's our strawberry hot springs, the equivalent of our clothing optional after dark.
Yes.